Okay, I don't know where to start off. Okay, my name is Cybertron. I'm from the group some of you may have heard of called Cellco 51. I co-ran Stargate BBS back in 93, 94, 95. I first started off a long time ago back in computers around, I guess you could say, 88, 89. Just fucking around trying to find something to do. Playing around with BASIC, typing hello on the computer, making it show up 1,000 times. Real simple shit that people usually get into. One day I was cruising the net, and a friend of mine told me about BBS. And he told me to check out this site called Stargate. So I checked it out, and it seemed pretty interesting. I really know nothing too much about what was going on. And all of a sudden, all these strange characters start showing up on the screen. And I'm trying to figure out, like, why the hell can't I see this shit? I mean, what's really going on?
Wait, should we do the disclaimer first? Because you know we're about to get into some shit.
Yeah. This is all for, like, informational purposes only. And purely theoretical. Right.
Okay. I was told that I had to have had the ability to see ANSI graphics. Back then, everybody was using a program called Telex. I had no way of receiving Telex. I didn't know what the fuck Telex was. After sending 1,000 messages in the message base, someone said, dude, you have to have elite access to get that shit. I'm like, what the fuck is elite access?
This is back in, what, like, 91?
Yeah,
91.
90, 91, yeah. 91. So he said, you got to have elite access. I'm like, how do you get that? No more of my questions got answered after that. So I'm like in the message base, leaving like 1,000 messages, like, where in the fuck can I get Telex from? Nobody's answering my questions. And all of a sudden, a guy by the name of Cyberphobe says, to get Telex, you have to have elite access. And your level have to get raised up. So I'm like, what level? I can see shit. He says, how many message bases do you see? I see like 15. He said, well, there's really 30. So I go back. I'm looking around. I'm like, dude, there's only 15. He's like, dude, there's 30. I'm like, dude, there's 15 of these bitches. He's like, it's 30. I'm serious. So after a period of time, I went through a lot of questions. Basically, I guess he was doing like a background check. I had to prove who I was, they making sure I wasn't fed or a snitch or anything. And in the meantime, I learned from a guy named Data Bandit, Cyberphobe, Big Mac, Trandrule, Silver Surfer. It was a site back in the day called Librarians of Doom, I believe it was. A guy named it by the name of Eric Eckerby. By the time I got on that site, I really, like, thought I was a shit then. I was reading, like, shit all day, all night. Now, with me coming from Detroit, nobody really understood me. I stopped watching sports. I stopped watching television. I would be on the computer, like, 16, 17 hours a day. 6-7 hours was standard for me, nonstop, reading, studying, chatting, trying to meet people. Later on, my access got raised. One day, I logged into Stargate, and my computer beeped 3 times. I was like, what the fuck is going on? Next thing I know, I see 30 message bases, and it says, congratulations, you now have elite access. So I guess I passed my test, so I'm looking like, what the fuck? I'm seeing anarchy, explosives, how to make bombs, potato cannons. Next thing I see, some shit about hacking.
Oh. Answer that shit, man.
Okay, so access gets raised up, so I'm like tripping out of this shit. So I'm just reading, studying shit. A guy by the name of Tech Man, which some of you may be familiar with, he's like the man. No, everybody who knows anything about cellular freaking in any sort have to know who this guy is. He like pioneered like most of the shit is out here. High tech hoods was like his children. Everybody knew this guy. I mean, around the world.
High tech hoods were the ones responsible for releasing some of the first Motorola ESM programming softwares for the old flips.
Yeah, I hear that's what they say.
Yeah, right.
But this is like informational purpose only. I'm just like...
Yeah, like...
Yeah.
These don't exist, right?
Technically, those don't exist.
Right.
With that one cell phone, they say you can, like, mod a lot of cell phones, but I'm not really sure. But that's just what they say. Meanwhile, one day me and Tech, we eventually met up after we found out we had quite a few things in common. When we were sitting in the car one day at a gas station, and he says, I got a trick for you. Go purchase this cell phone and bring it to me and meet me at the gas station. I'm like, yeah, okay. He takes the cell phone, hooks it up into a laptop just like this one right here. This
just,
is
just like that one.
This is my original laptop that probably holds a world record for the most cell phones cloned. I mean, not being arrogant, but I probably can clone a cell phone faster than anybody probably in the world. Why? Because I was doing like about 150 to 300 cell phones a day. One time we accessed Cellular One's database, which is now Verizon Wireless. They said we caused a 38% loss in cellular sales.
What year was that? Is that 93, 94?
That'll be about 93, 94.
Yeah.
He hooks up the cell phone, tells me to do this. A lot of colors is beeping. Shit's happening. I'm following, acting like I know what the hell he's talking about. I don't have the slightest idea what the fuck he's saying. It's a little shit here and there, I'm understanding. Next thing I know, I had this phone for like 2 days playing with it. I know it's not working. He disconnects the cell phone, hands it to me and said, here, make a call. So I call my girlfriend at home. I'm like, yeah, this is bullshit. I'm like, hello? She's like, hello? I'm like, oh, what the fuck? He did this shit with a fucking laptop. We're not inside a cellular building. I'm like, oh yeah, this shit rocks right here.
No context.
I got to
sign,
do this.
No
context
or
nothing. He shows me a cellular record, tells me about the ESN, the men, station class, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm like tripping out, like, what the fuck? Now at this time period, cell phone cloning is basically about zero almost. Probably about 3 to 5% of people knew what the fuck cell phone cloning was, or even the average person could even purchase a cell phone.
There was some T-files written, but like really late 80s by Bootleg and I think Doctor Who.
Yeah, Doctor Who.
But I mean, like before, you know, the first revision of Motorola is like these pre-91 22 flips, before the Oki 9, before the Nokia 101s. Like all these phones, you can clone ESNs with a cable. Like, there was really, 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 really minute amounts of cloning going on before, like, you know, 90 to 92, but that involved, like, buying a fucking Novatel and popping a prom out and actually having to write a prom chip and swap chips every time you wanted to change a pair.
It wasn't
really practical on a wide scale at all.
Yeah, so if you knew anything about cell phone cloning at the time, it was really underground. So one day I was thinking, I was like, I can take this shit right here, what I learned, all this elite shit, put it into practical application, take it to the hood, and like take the fucking city over. In about 6-7 months, that's basically what the fuck I did. Cell phone cloning like blew the fuck up. I was basically known as the man. Anything have to do with computers, I knew about it, basically because at that time period, you had to know about computers. There wasn't really no such thing as a fucking script kiddie. It's either you knew your shit or you didn't. You had to study your shit. It's not like the World Wide Web even fucking existed yet.
Well, it did, but, yeah.
No, way back then, no, it really wasn't. I mean, I don't think we did anything.
Well, practically, but...
Well, it was like...
As a protocol.
Shitty, yeah. Real shitty. So, me and some guys, we basically hooked up. And basically on a day-to-day basis, we went trashing. Everybody basically had a position. In this position, nobody stepped on anybody's toes. If you were a hacker, that's specifically what you did. If you were a freaker, that's specifically what you did. If you were into anarchy, that was your shit. So basically, as information got passed on to us, we began to network and push our shit throughout the city. Basically, we had Detroit, Ann Arbor, Warren, Romulus, all the major metropolitan communities covered. I had one guy working that dealt with all his customers. He only dealt with those customers. It was a certain code I would program into the phone so I know when activation started, when activation ended. We guaranteed basically 30-day service. Anything under 3 days of cutoff, you had to repay. Starting off connection fee was $250. If you wanted a cell phone, it would run you between $500 and $600. So on a day-to-day basis, I would do at least between 150, 300 cell phones. The quantity I was doing, I had to learn how to do it faster. I had to learn how to do it quicker. So basically, you had to learn how to shortcut a lot of methods. Shortcutting, You want to talk about that? And I ain't talking about shortcuts. It's the ways you can shortcut the programming of a cell phone to make it like real easy, real quick, real fast. Everything is like bada bing, no problem. Shit goes through like real, real fast. But you just have to set your computer in a certain way, slow down the clock speed a little bit, and change a few other things.
Not that I would know or anything, but a little birdie told me that a really easy way to do it, if you can, you know, open up the phones and close them really quickly, is have a test clip for the EEPROM or for the EEPROM. And if you're going to, if you got like, you know, 20 Motorola's or whatever, and you want to just like throw a bunch of pairs in them, you don't necessarily want to go through the trouble of, you know, booting up your 286 and programming the shit over the parallel port one by one. Just line them up, you know, have your pairs lined up, write a 2K program just to dump the code of the ESN, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4, 5, whatever. You just clip the test clip on the EEPROMs like in a row.
You want to make the test clip?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't.
Oh, you don't. Oh, okay. Okay.
The test clip for the Ericssons was pretty cool because there was a test clip with a PIC chip in it that you could put on the bottom data connector of the phone. And when you had that on it, enabled a mode that was just like the OK. You could program the ESN through the keypad. So you pop the clip on the phone, program the ESN through the keypad, go to the next one, go to the next one, go to the next one. You only need one clip for as many phones as you want to do. And you don't have to put a separate chip in every phone, like with the OK or with the Motorola. We use a loader. The loaders are fun, but they just take too long.
Yeah, they really do. And they time out a lot of times.
Yeah. Do you want me to know what a loader is?
Huh?
Do you guys know like what a loader is and cloning Motorolas? Basically, you have one of the old-style Motorola bag phones, and you make some custom cables for it, the schematics for which we have that you guys wrote.
Who?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wrote. Right.
Yeah.
So basically the idea goes you have a modified PROM that you're putting in the bag, and what you do with that is you use a special Motorola software to dump your new ESN min pair into the loader or the bag.
Wasn't it called like Mod 66 or something?
Yeah, it was Mod 66 or, you know, high-tech hood software, whatever. And then you actually had to fabricate a different cable that goes in between the loader phone, the bag phone, and the flip that you want to program. So it was just kind of like you swap the ESN to here, and then you swap the ESNs this way, and eventually the ESN you want gets filtered down to the flip, which works. You know, it's got some bugs, but they can all be corrected, but it just takes too goddamn long.
Yes, it does. Okay, this right here is the Mott programming cable. If you ever read this about on Nuts and Volts and other magazines like that.
Cost you like $800.
Yes, I can make this bitch from Radio Shack from a cellular store that cost me about $25 and about another like $50 from Radio Shack.
Like, now it's like $3 for a car adapter.
Yeah, but that's like the price back then. So I can make a Mott cable in about 20 minutes. And it'll probably cost about a total of maybe under $100 complete. Man. So basically, word catches on in the streets, and the next thing I know, I was like the biggest name in the underground compared to like street level shit. I had guys contacting me. Yes, definitely in the hood.
Yeah.
I had guys contacting me from Vegas. I had a guy who was offering me for this exact same cable. And this is the cable right here for the NEC P300. Also does the 600. For these two cables, and for the, what was one more cable?
For the Panasonics?
Yeah, the Panasonic.
Yeah, the EFGH series or whatever.
Yeah, I'm correct. Yeah, that's the one. Two or three of those cables, he was offering me $30,000. The amount of money you could receive on a daily basis was, like, phenomenal. Just think about it. You do two customers. Automatically, if they have a cell phone, you made $500. Now, this is $500 back in, like, 1990.
And to do two customers, it takes a minute.
Yeah, so it take me, like, about, what, the equivalent of 6 minutes to make $250 to $500. I would do this nonstop all day, all night.
The only real sketch part is meeting with the people.
I didn't even do that. See, that's the thing. When it comes to forming a crew, you have to have certain things in order. When you form a crew, you should do background checks, just like the Fed do background checks. You don't want no fucking snitches in your shit. If you do, they must be handled with accordingly. Anybody that was with my crew knew that we ran our shit like a fucking military. It was no fucking bullshit. I was the fucking computer guy. Everybody else was a fucking computer guy, and our guys on the streets were street guys. So not only would we like fuck your shit up, we would like blow your shit up. So it was like no type of happiness with us ever on no type of bad level. Everybody got the point, quick, fast, in a hurry. When you're dealing with the crew, you're supposed to make no unnecessary excuses for wrongdoing. Everybody should be held accountable for their actions. If you don't know something, you fucking speak. You don't hold it in, trying to show that you have a fucking ego just to prove a fucking point. Because for one, that gets you busted, that gets you hot, and that gets your friends in jail. My workers all ran brand new cars. I drove a fucking 91 Dodge Spirit. Not because I couldn't afford it, but because I didn't want to be a hot boy. I didn't wear jewelry. I hung out minimally. The people I hung out with were in my crew. If you were not in my crew, you couldn't talk to me. You couldn't speak with me. Don't ask me no fucking computer questions. I'm not about to ask you how do you do this and how you do that. So don't ask me the same thing. I'm not going to tell you how to hack your fucking girlfriend's Hotmail account. I get tired of hearing stories about, I know somebody who can get into a fucking ATM machine. I mean, I heard them stories 1,000 times. It's like, yeah, right. So,
Yeah, but haven't you told those stories a few times?
No. No, I know I haven't. Oh, they were there.
It's cool.
Okay, as everybody know, basically, Selco 51, got taken down. I believe it was called Operation Cyber Snare.
The footage actually is available. If I think it's linked off the DEF CON media archive. Phony and RF Burns from the DOC made this documentary a while back in 96 or 97 called Hackers 95. Usual hijinks, funny shit, along the spirit of like information, or no, not information before. Unauthorized access by that one chick. Forget what the fuck her name was. Anyways, it's just a video of, like, a bunch of old school people doing shit, whatever, faces blocked out. But they actually had footage where they went to the press conference for Operation Cyber Snare in Jersey, where the Secret Service held it at their branch office. And I think they quoted, like, out of all the people busted that one year, it was something like $157 million worth of cellular fraud, just in that one year alone.
Yeah. So it was like, we was like really owning shit.
Yeah.
Now, the art to owning shit is on a totally different level. Basically, when you talk about crime, you're basically talking about the art of deception. When you really want to put together a crew, is one thing you must learn, and that's the use of women. Whether you want to admit it or not, women control the fucking world. Now, when you be elite, you must know that you are better than everybody else, so you must act accordingly. If you do not understand the role of women and the use of women, you really don't know what the fuck you're doing. I mean, we all know we guys. We know we can beat the fuck out of them, all that good type of shit like that. But unless you know women control the fucking world, you just really fucked up. There's no guy out here who will not stop what the fuck they're doing to talk to the right chick. It's the right chick come up to you, you will drop anything you're doing and go talk to her. Why? Because pussy is power. So, when you become a hacker, well, as some people become hackers, you learn reverse engineering. So what you must do is learn how to reverse engineer the pussy back on them. So when you meet a female, it's not based on how she looks. You should base it on where does she work. Anybody who knows me knows that when I talk to a female, not only must she look good, the first question I'm going to ask you is, where does she work at? The main thing that made our crew so powerful, the main reason why we took so much control, is because we read and studied our shit 24/7, and we believed in guerrilla warfare. Now, guerrilla warfare is when you do shit the other way that's not conventional. So what we would do is, we would find the females who work in all the major businesses, all the major corporations, Verizon, Cellular One, DTE, IBM, and Ameritech. The females that sometime may get attention. The ones who think that they know every damn thing will basically send a guy to that female based on what they like and have them go, as they say, spit game to them. Now, once that female likes you, like any female, she will do anything you say, just like vice versa. When we like a female, we do stupid shit we would not even believe that we're doing. I mean, okay.
Well, let me put it this way. Like, you know, guys will buy flowers. Guys will, you know, take them out to dinner. Well, given the right social engineering techniques, chicks will give up passwords. Chicks will modify account balances.
Oh, yeah, really?
Chicks will drop ESN lists.
Yeah.
Chicks will even give you their office pass card.
Now, one of my main workers was a female who was also my girlfriend, and she worked in corporate at Cellular One. Remember, this is only for informational purposes only.
We already did time for this shit, so it's not like a...
Ain't that a bitch? Okay, basically, if you have a female that works in any major business or corporation at the right job position, you basically can get any information you want. As long as you don't fuck her over. Basically...
No, wait, as long as she doesn't realize she's being fucked over.
That's what social engineering is all about, though.
Isn't it?
Exactly. Prime example. You walk into Ameritech, pay your cell phone bill. You want to look to the one, that female who gives you eye contact. Plus, she's got to look halfway cute at least, because, you know, if she's, like, butt-fucking ugly and you, like, trying to holler at her, she's going to be like, what the fuck are you trying to talk to me for? So you have to have some type of class, some type of taste. You talk to her, casual conversation, regular way you get a female phone number, but in this case, you're getting your phone number for other reasons as well. Basically, as you get closer to her, you get closer to her job position, and you gradually start asking her questions. If you read a book called The Art of War by Sun Tzu, you learn how to deal with people, you learn how to communicate. One of my favorite chapters of Art of War to Sun Tzu is chapter 13. It's called The Spies. Every organization, every country has spies. We spy on every fucking country. Every country spies on us. Why? Because nobody's going to tell you everything. Some shit you just have to find out for yourself. What better method is there than to have a spy amongst their ranks? Why? To feed you information. What better source would you have but a woman?
Somebody's in the show.
Why a woman? Because a woman will always be get looked down upon because she is a female. And a guy will always think a female is like just a piece of ass and she just holding position. But little did they know that these same females who work in all these major businesses was also working for us. So you wait till she go to work and that manager or that boss pisses her off. That's your main time to try getting information. When you know you laid that dick down right, and she calls your name, and you know she start acting funny, calling you 1,000 fucking times, blowing up your cell phone, even though you're not paying the bill, but still. That's your time to social engineer information out of her. We also had males who worked in certain businesses just to get a job, just to get information. This was done, like, on a routine basis.
I mean, it doesn't even have to be directly for information. I mean, you could just go to visit her at work for a lunch break and look at those wonderful little post-it notes they have stuck on the monitors.
Yeah, or besides that, you can just ask her to give you the trash from a certain room or certain offices on a daily basis.
Even offer to do her a favor and recycle it for her, you know?
Nobody's that damn dumb.
You'd be surprised.
The girls he messed with, I wouldn't be surprised if you know Joe. Basically, everything came into a fall as we found out it was basically a guy who was working with the government and... rather not say his name because if I seen him, I probably still smash his face in to this day.
Are you talking about the local crew? Or are you talking about Alphabets?
Yeah, the big guy.
Right.
He's like the main problem.
Yeah.
When everything got taken down, ironically that day I was in another lawyer's office batting a case with State Farms. Went to the dealership. My car got broken into. They tried to say I had my car broken into, blah, blah, blah. So what do? I go to State Farms out in Farmington Hills, and I'm searching me a female to give me all the information that's happening on my shit. Took a little bit of time, but it was well worth it.
Was the ass good?
Huh?
Was the ass good?
Of course. It's business. I find out that they're trying to, like, fuck me. So what do? I contact, like, various friends who owns electronic businesses and have them write me up receipts. They wanted to close me out at, like, $1,500. I end up closing it out at, like, $4,500. Actually, only had, like, $2,500 worth of shit. But just because they tried to be a slick ass, I decided to be slicker. Well, later on that evening, my cell phone was ringing off the fucking hook.
The one that you paid for, right?
Of course. You know, I always pay bills. That's a good thing to do. I cut off my cell phone. I'm like, damn, what the fuck? My pager is beeping like 1,000 times. Now, back in like the 80s, I would average like an $80 to $90 cell phone bill. I mean, my fault. Pager bill. To this day, a $90 to $150 pager bill is like ludicrous.
Yeah, I mean, it's just $7.95 a month. Whatever the fuck you got, they ain't even check IDs.
But the thing they don't tell you is if you get a certain amount of calls, usually like over $750 a month, they charge you like 5 to 10 cents for every call after that. So my pager was like actually beeping that much. But at this particular moment, it was beeping way too much. So I cut off my pager. I leave my attorney's office after we close out the case. I pick up the phone and so on. And it's my girlfriend at the time telling me that the feds then came, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. They took every fucking thing. All your shit is gone. You need to come to the house quick. So I'm thinking like, oh, what the fuck? So I'm thinking like, now my empire is like crumbled. So now I'm like skeptical of everybody around me. But the thing about it is everybody knew the rules on our crew. You speak, you get dealt with. And anybody within your crew, you should have all their information. Not just for your protection, but for their protection as well. I went home, went to the basement, blasted my DJ equipment, just in case it was to leave any bugs. It's one thing that Tech Man taught me that I never realized so much later, because my case happened in 94, March 24th is the date he raided me, and I just got off probation last year, is that when you own communications, you have complete control. When you're dealing with corporate businesses, they do not want anybody owning their communications. That's like the biggest no-no. When you have communications, you have control over everything that people say and do. But not only that, we had control over businesses in the local area. We had Cellular One and Ameritech on lock, period. It got to the point that when they set up their cloning department and when they would send internal memorandums, we would still go read their shit and then go clone their fucking phones and blow their bills up. Then after that, when they got off the phone with them, we'll call them up and say, yeah, we got your shit, now what? Ha ha, and hang the fuck up. So we really pissed like a lot of people off. A lot. I ended up getting like 38 counts of access devices fraud.
Is that 10.3 A and B?
1029 A and B. Possession of electronic static devices. Possession of corporate information. Possession of, not necessarily controlled substances, but I had access to like certain chemicals because I have a background in like the medical field. So it got to the point to whereas one reason nobody would mess with us is because the average person, when you get into a fight, you use a gun. No. My second shit was like anarchy. I mastered the shit. I can make a fucking bomb out of bubble gum. Toothpaste. It's like not that difficult. I could go into a fucking house, I'll snatch out the fucking thermometer out that bitch, pull the mercury switch, and make a fucking device to blow your shit up. So if you want to get into a beef with me, you ain't got to worry about me being there. I'm not about to deal with the police and people seeing my face and all that other type of bullshit. I'm going to handle my shit at a much more professional level. When you do crime, you must be professional. There's no fucking room for mistakes. There's no room for fuck-ups.
In other words, you know, fuck around with flame wars in the hood.
Exactly. But in the same sense, everyone who was elite in Michigan, they knew who we were and they knew what we stand for. If we asked for information, we received information. Not just because we were the shit and we controlled shit and because we owned shit. It's because if you didn't, we would fuck you up. And that was point blank. we was like the equivalent of like elite hacker mafia. We was very organized. Everyone had a position. Everyone that knew what was expected of them. We had regular meetings. Regular meetings. No outsiders. You can't bring your girl. You can't bring your boyfriend. If you were not within the crew, you did not fuck with nobody outside of the crew. When you was about your money, you was about your money. You wasn't about no extra bullshit. If you told me you had 5 phones, you brought me 5 phones. You don't bring me 6, because my time is only made for 5 phones at that particular time. They got them 5 phones back. When you have problems with your customers, your workers deal with your customers. You don't deal with your customers. You deal with your workers, because you have to find new ways of working around new shit that Motorola brings out and NEC. You have to find new mods and shit. You have to update your software, and then you have to do like regular shit like get drunk and get high. So you have to balance your time out. Basically, what ended up happening was I ended up getting a split sentence. I got 5 years halfway house. I mean, my fault. 5 months halfway house, 5 months tether. Federal time is a true bitch. Another thing Tech Man told me was that for the longest time, no one knew Cybertron was a black guy. Nobody knew that Cybertron was a black guy from urban Detroit that like owned this fucking city in like 93-94. Dennis himself, when he first met me, he thought Cybertron was a fat, short, white boy with glasses. That was his exact words. He was like shocked the shit out of him. When we would first have meetings and go trashing, when we would meet up, we always say what we were wearing shit, and we'll hook up. And it was like, when I would walk in, everybody would be like, okay, who the fuck is this guy right here? I'd be like, yo, what's going on?
Don't take my wallet, please.
It was like, they'd be like, what's up? And they just like stand looking at me like, I'm like, dude, I'm Cybertron. They're like.
At the BBS gatherings for Stargate.
Yes. Yeah. They'd be like, yeah, okay, right. So I'm like, no, I'm serious. And I do this. Dude, I'm Cybertron. My shit is tattooed. For me, this shit is real. They was like, what the fuck? You have that shit tattooed on your arm? I'm like, think about it. We put tattoos of females' names, our kids, marijuana leaves, our gang signs.
Don't forget the
These are shits
people.
That represent who we are. Well, this is, represents what the fuck I am. It represents what the fuck I was about. Plus, at that time, we knew certain shit was happening, and that was just like my way of being rebellious and not giving a fuck who the fuck knew. Because I knew, could nobody do shit to me? Well, so I thought. Basically, when you first get arrested by the feds, technically they don't arrest you. The police department in that area basically does all the work. The feds just come in with a fucking pad and like check shit off and say, get this, get that. So when I came into my crib, it's like everything was gone. Camcorders, batteries, stupid shit. Only thing I had was like a PlayStation and my DJ equipment. And a television. Everything else.
I would have thought you got robbed. Shit.
Yes, literally. They even answered my phone. I had people calling me. But the thing of about it was, we talked in codes. So because we only fuck with people within the crew, if it was not you, your people knew exactly whether if it was you or not. You don't let your girlfriend answer your phone. You don't let your boys answer your phone. When you let other people answer your phone, they answer in their way. When we answer the phone, we answer in our way. So automatically, right off the rip, when you say, hello, can I speak to Tron? Or my new real name is Malik. Can I speak to Malik or DJ Malik? I'll answer in a certain way. That first word that comes out my mouth, is if that is not the word that I'm supposed to say, automatically, you know it's not me. The conversation changed. So a friend of mine tells me, he calls me at exactly the same time they raided my place. He's like, yo, let me speak to DJ Malik. He was like, yeah, this is me. What's going on? My boy says, he says, this is not Malik. Yes, it is. What's going on? Click. The moment he hung up that phone, everybody knew what happened. Also, beforehand, the people who weren't contacted immediately automatically knew. Because when they got contact, when I got contacted about the messages about the feds raiding my place, I contacted everybody in my crew. Why? Because it's no time for you to act stupid and scared about the consequences. Everybody is in this shit for whatever reasons it may be. mainly money for control, for the power. So you don't want to fuck up nobody's shit. And of course you don't want everybody to fuck up your shit. When I told him, everyone knew what the fuck was going on. Everybody knew what was expected of him. And basically, we all basically distanced ourselves. At that time period, I helped a business get started up called, I believe it was called The Spy Shop. It was located on 7 Mile. I later found out that basically, it seemed like I was a scapegoat for like every guy in fucking Michigan who did cell phone cloning. So basically, I kept my fucking mouth closed, but everybody snitched on me. I basically just played it like I ain't know what the fuck is going on. I was just cruising the internet one day, and I seen some shit about cell phone cloning, so I tried it. That was my story. Now, with the feds, they're going to take you into a fucking office. And they'll do the classic good cop, bad cop scenario. Yeah, so what the fuck is all this shit right here? You tell me. Come on, I know about you hacker guys and fuck the government and fuck the feds and free the wares and all this shit. So I'm sitting here like, So just go ahead, just tell us what the fuck is going on, and we'll just let you go. We'll cut you a deal. Well, if anybody knows law, the feds can't cut you a deal. That's done by the prosecutors and shit.
Only by the DA.
Yeah, exactly.
Only by the DA.
If you are not, like, in law, you cannot make a deal. The feds just get evidence to support whatever the fuck they're trying to give you. My attorney went over everything with me. He told me exactly what they would say, how they would act, and they did it to a T. One guy is telling me about how I'm, like, a piece of shit, and I think I'm the shit because I did this, and then I think because I did that. And we know everything you did, and we know everything you've done, and everybody has told on you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm like, yeah, okay.
But if they know everything you did, why the fuck are they asking you?
Exactly. That's the main thing. You must study your enemy. That's one important thing. You must study the enemy. If you scan a fucking network, what are you doing? You studying that enemy's network. You looking for holes. You looking for ports. You looking for a fucking way in. Well, just on the opposite scale, you never know what the fuck is going to happen. So when you plan, an important thing to do, especially if you're elite and you really want to get into some shit, anytime you plan to do anything, always plan to fail. Why? Because if you always plan to fail, no matter what happens, when shit goes bad, automatically you know what to do. If you always plan to fail, you always know what to do when some fucked up shit happens. Based on those variables of what goes right and what goes wrong, you know whether you should just stop it if it's a waste of your time. If you go do plan A and plan A don't work, well, you already plan for that shit to fail just in case you go to plan B. If plan B don't work, you already plan just in case if A don't work, you go to plan B. So automatically, you still always own your shit. So you're never falling off. When you plan to fail, you're still always one step ahead of the game. That way, you don't have to worry about some shit happening and you're like freaking the fuck out, what the fuck I'm going to do. Well, and we already know what the fuck is about to happen. Bam, we just do this. Now, if ABC don't work, based on those variables, you know whether you should just continue or just be like, fuck it, and just drop it and just do something else. So basically, that's what I did. I planned for the downfall of the crew. I planned for fucked up shit to happen. Not because I wanted it to and I wanted to, like, put salt in my own game, as they say, but I just wanted to know what the fuck I'm going to do, how in the fuck am I going to act, just in case when shit falls. Well, basically, after they told me what I was being charged with and all the, like, the problems I caused and how they're going to make me fucking rot and shit and you guys think you're so fucking smart and blah, 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 I just sat back. I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. They see I wasn't talking, so basically, they told me to get the fuck out the office. Then all of a sudden, the nice cop, because they always do the good cop, bad cop routine, he says, hold on, whatever the fuck, fed bitch, step out the room for a second, let me talk to him. Oh, if any feds in here, one thing I have to say to the whole federal department, kiss my fucking ass. Don Whitman, you are a fucking bitch, and if you get to it, I hope you fucking die of cancer of the eyes. So if any of y'all in y'all here see her, or if y'all work with her, you can tell her I fucking said it and kiss my ass. Okay, back to the regular shit. He leaves the room and he says, look, I know the guy, you know, he's got a little bad temper, blah, blah, blah. Why don't you just cooperate, tell me, you know, how you did it, who you work with, who you're involved with, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I just make it easy on you. I told him, I was like, I think y'all really got the wrong guy. I'm like, yeah, I know about the shit, but that's just it. I just know about it. I just tried it. It ain't that much of a big thing to me. I don't see what all the attention is for. Next thing you know, now he's playing the bad cop all of a sudden. He tells me to get out the office. So I go home. Well, what the feds do, they sit and plot and plan, and what they do is they try to gather up evidence, get people to snitch on you, and give you certain circumstances to, like, put you in uncomfortable. They try to make you, like, very fucking uncomfortable. They would do shit like, my financial aid was, like, perfect. All of a sudden, paperwork is missing. They have my driver's license and Social Security number, Social Security card. They can't find it, but it's in the property room. So what does that do? If you cannot get... You cannot get a job if you do not have a driver's license or a Social Security card. So if you can't get a job, what else can you do? You must resort back to the crime that you was involved with. So basically, they're trying to set you up. So when they keep your shit, they're not just keeping your shit just to keep it for evidence. They're keeping it hoping that you'll fuck up while they watch you and following you and all this, do the other type of dumb shit, and hope you do the exact same shit. On a routine basis, it was not uncommon to see Fed cars sitting outside my fucking crib. By the time the word hit the streets that I got hit, everybody, like, started acting weird. It was like, this fucking guy is dangerous. The next thing I know, my crew gets, like, even tighter. Basically, I find out who my confidential informant was. Confidential informant in Fed terms means snitch. Basically, what happened was a guy that I fired for doing some shit I wasn't tolerating.
Fight out the crew. Right.
Nah.
Or was this the other thing?
It wasn't necessarily a fight within the crew.
Yeah.
But it's only certain shit you tolerate. It's only certain shit you should tolerate from anybody. And if you break the rules, you're gone. You should make no unnecessary excuses for wrongdoing. Everybody should be held accountable. He did some shit thinking I wouldn't know. Now, anytime you are a leader in any type of organization, and on the level of cell phone cloning, that was my shit. If it was specifically hacking, that was somebody else's shit. If it was like weed, because a friend of mine grew hydrogans and shit, that was his shit. You are the master of your shit, and nobody knows that shit better than you. People that's up under you, they come to you, they give you information, blah, blah, blah. But they don't keep shit hidden. You're supposed to, like, share the information. Well, what he didn't know was, like I said, I had a certain code I would put into the cell phone on the chip so that I would know when the customer began and ended service. What he was doing was he was saying that customers' months was up when actually they wasn't, so that he could get additional payment. So what he didn't know was that I network pretty fucking good, and my social engineering skills is, like, fucking superb, because it's like the average person didn't have computers back then. It just was like, if you had a computer, I remember the term would be like, what's that? If I was said I was on the internet, I remember the time when people were like, what's the internet? So this is like an early period. And with me being in that type of environment way back then, it was like very weird shit. Very, very, very weird shit. Automatically, I was, like, set apart from everybody else. Real quick. It got to the point to where, as I could say that, I probably fixed more computers than probably IBM on certain days. I mean, when you have a black guy in the community who knows about electronics that nobody else knows about, when people steal shit, eventually they find some way to contact you. Yeah, man, I got like 15 laptops. What can you do with them? Oh, really? Give me $100 for them. Yeah, all right. They don't know what they're worth. Nobody's really fucking with computers back in like the 90s that much. I mean, unless you're a fucking professional or a fucking computer geek, you didn't have a fucking laptop. It's like, what's the purpose for it? Nobody really wanted to even be bothered with that shit, paying like $2,000-$3,000 for a laptop.
Except for you, you know, there weren't any professionals or computer geeks in the hood.
No, none at all. It was like, in Detroit, everybody knew, like, who the fuck I was. Oh, who wanna talk? Oh, your computer's fucked up? I would talk to him. I never even bothered getting an A certification because it was like, for what? I mean, I would work on people's networks and jobs because they just knew I was, like, on my shit. I mean, I used to work on so many fucking stolen computers, I had no choice but to learn how to fix them if I wanted to resell them. When shit broke down, I can't take a fucking stolen-ass computer to a business and be like, yeah, could you fix this? And then they run the fucking numbers on the back of it and they find out it's stolen. Then they're going to be looking at me funny anyway because they're like, what the fuck is he doing in the damn computer? So it was like, I had to learn how to fix shit myself. I had no choice. Okay, back to the Fed shit. I really hate these people. Basically, when you're dealing with the feds, especially when you're convicted of a computer crime, it's best like to keep your fucking mouth shut. Everybody wants to know you. Everybody wants to meet you. Everybody wanna tell you their little crazy stories about they know somebody who like can get into like banks and shit. And they transfer like $3 or $4 million and all this other type of crazy crap. Prime example would be last year when I was supposed to speak. Like the incident is like something off a fucking TV movie. One day me and some friends, we was in Wayne State University scanning the network. Not scanning to get in because Wayne State ain't shit anyway, but we just scanning just to be fucking around.
You would be surprised at how much quality porn there is on Open File Share.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. We're scanning it. I'm like, damn, I'm getting that shit if I want to. Some friend cracked a joke like, well, they think you're such a badass. Send a guy a note. Tell him to fix that shit or tell him you'll fix it. I'm like, yeah, all right. Send a note off to him like, yeah, you need to fix your shit. I can get in that bitch. I didn't say it like that. I said, yes, you have a weakness at blah, 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 blah. You might want to check that shit out. If you need help, email me. One day I go see my probation officer and she's like, blah, blah, blah. You know, they always trying to psychoanalyze you. So basically I would do is psychoanalyze them, let them know you cannot psychoanalyze me and don't try to double talk. This shit don't work. So she asked me one day, like, would you ever do that again? I say, yeah. So it's like, after all you've been through, we'll still do it all over again. I'm like, of course. I was like, I would do it all over again. I just wouldn't do it again the same way. So she asked me, how would it be different? I was like, I'd probably go get a real job. I'd do it on a professional level. I clone sales, but I clone sales legally for like the actual company itself. So actually she was just trying to find out, like, do I have, like, the potential to, like, still do, like, felonious type of shit. So I played along for a second, like, yeah, I would, but then I, like, flipped the script on, like, nah, I'm reformed, I'm good, you know, American Pie, all that good shit like that. I was like, as a matter of fact, Wayne State had a weakness in it. I sent the administrator a note saying, yeah, fix your shit. She was like, oh, you did? She's like, whoa, I'm proud of you. I'm like, I told you, I'm not a bad guy no more. That shit is behind me. I'm trying to go to medical school. Fuck with dead bodies. Y'all live motherfuckers get on my fucking nerves. I'd rather stay to myself. Fuck with the dead. They don't bother people. They just fart, burp, make a couple moans and groans, and that's the fucking about it. Next thing I know, my old probation officer, the bitch Don Whitman, gets promoted to be chief probation officer or wherever the fuck of downtown Detroit. They send me to a new caseload. So I meet her. I sit down. She's like, very interesting. I'm not saying nothing. Anytime you deal with feds, it's best to be short, exact, and right to the point. Because for one, they will psychoanalyze the fuck out of you. Why? Because that's what the fuck they're trained to do. They're trained to notice criminal behavior. They train to notice, like, shift in the eyes, the way you move your hands, the tone that you speak at, the way your voice rises and falls. Why? Because they're here to protect the government and, you know, They would use any means necessary to do so. So, they, of course, they would train their people how to, like, find the fucking criminal. Notice behavior changes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm sitting back, and she's looking over my case. She says, I think you should get put on a computer restriction. I'm like, for what? You have some very interesting happenings here. It's just very odd. Why did the judge never put you on a computer restriction? For what? I don't know nothing about computers. But I see you know something about, a little bit about computers. I seen you do computer work here and there. I hear you worked on a few networks for a few businesses around. I'm like, yeah, a friend of mine was teaching me how to do some shit, and I said if I do fuck with computers, I'm going to do it legally, so I need to learn some shit the right way. So he should let me go with him, and he'll pay me for helping him out. Most I do is, like, hit the power button and, like, plug shit in. Well, I still believe you should get put on computer restriction. So she says, already has the paper written up. Here, sign this. Well, basically what you don't know is that nowadays, if you can get convicted of a computer-related crime, the judge will automatically put you on computer restriction, which means the government can come to your house as many times as they want and routinely scan your hard drive. Anything that's out in the open, if it looks suspicious, they can take it. So, of course, if you walk in and it smells funny, you know, now they can get, like, a search warrant to search your premises for marijuana or whatever the fuck it smells like. If you have a weird device that just doesn't look like a regular cell phone, or if you just have a cell phone out, if they believe that it may be cloned, they can confiscate your cell phone. And then they can look through your cell phone records. So, she didn't know I already researched this shit out, so I'm thinking, like, this bitch is not about to come into my house and, like, scan my fucking hard drive. Because, of course, I'm still doing shit. I mean, fuck, that's what the fuck I know how to do best. So, I'm like, no, slide it back. Well, I think you should. She slides it back at me. I'm like, I'm not signing that. She's like, why the judge didn't put you on computer restriction? I'm like, because, I mean, I don't know shit about computers. I just fuck around a little bit and, like, I'm a fucking medical student. And it's like, I don't think about that. Well, you should have no problem. No, I have a problem with you coming into my house and I don't trust you people. Oh, so you have a vendetta against us. I'm like, no, I just don't trust you. You're crooked. So she asked me, why do I think you're crooked? So I started citing examples throughout history when the government has fucked people. To the date.
Add one to the list.
Yes. So she's like, whoa. She shakes her head. She's like, well, if you don't sign up on this piece of paper, I might have to put you back in front of the judge and get him to put you on computer restriction. So I'm thinking, like, what the fuck is all this shit coming from? Come to find out, that little email I sent to Wayne State, they tried taking it as a hack attempt at Wayne State. It became an issue of, was it permissible or a first-line hack attempt for me to scan Wayne State's network? So basically, is port scanning illegal? So basically, instead of me working on my fucking finals for organic chemistry, I'm helping my attorney find out, was it a first-line hack attempt for me to scan Wayne State Network? Basically, they was trying to send me away for 2 years for something I didn't do. Then it went from that, they said I tried to break into Wayne State, change grades, and transfer monies. I don't know where the fuck that shit came from.
Wayne State's budget is shit.
Yeah, their budget is shit. Wayne State don't have any money. I have fucking good grades except for the grades they fucked up. The feds was, like, fucking with me so bad, I actually had to go to my professor and have my professor for another organic chemistry class write a letter to the judge, Judge Paul Borman, for the record, to get permission to go to class on time and to go to study group. Why? Because when I was in the federal halfway house, they considered me to be the arrogant smartass who knows every fucking thing and likes to debate people. Even though I never talk, but this is just, I guess, I don't know where the fuck it came from. I just kept it myself. I'm not the type of person, look, I'm a fucking inmate. You got your little fed job, whatever the fuck. I'm not about to sit up and say, hi, Miss So-and-so, hi, Mr. So-and-so. You're not my fucking friend, and I don't give a fuck whether you're, like, happy or not. So I don't have shit to say. So it's like, let me do my time, leave me the fuck alone, and just let me do my shit. So automatically I got like this very, very arrogant persona, and I don't like to be social and all this other type of shit. So basically they end up saying I tried to hack New Wayne State, change grades, and transfer monies. Next thing I know, I'm back in front of the judge. So I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Comes out of the clear blue out of nowhere. Next thing I know, my old probation officer and my old one says, yes, he goes to hacker conferences and hacker meetings. He goes by the name of Enigma123, and he reads magazines like 2600 and Nuts and Bolts. And I think he really need to be like put on computer restriction, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We even hear he has a tattoo on his arm, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So technically, I'm not really even talking about whether I hacked into Wayne State or not. They're too busy talking about fucking me reading shit and studying stuff, which is like freedom of information, so it's like no big thing. What the fuck is the big deal that I read 2600? I mean, so fucking what? I mean, what, I gotta read Hooters to be regular or something? I mean, I don't understand that shit. So basically what ends up happening is just before a con, this is like, what, December is it?
Yeah, it's like December, January.
Yeah, December, January. I go back in front of the judge, and he says, there's always a lot of weird shit happening to you. This is what the judge says. He says, you have no respect for authority, and consider what I see the probation officers wrote. They consider you to be a threat to the community. So I'm like, I'm just standing there like, where the fuck is all this shit coming from? He says, I'm going to give you 90 days. I'm taking you off probation. I never want to see you in my courtroom again. Bam! Hit the gavel. Basically, after that, judge turns around. He's about to leave out the courtroom. My attorney says, Your Honor, may my client self-submit? He turns around and says no and slams the door. Basically, when he means self-submit, when you get caught by the feds, whatever you want to call it, you can either turn yourself in or basically they take you right then and there. So basically, after he got finished saying all the little attorney shit with the prosecutor, blah, 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 I'm like, okay, now what the fuck is going on? He says, my attorney says, he says, you have to do 90 days, but after that, they're going to release your probation, so you'll be a free man. So I'm wondering why my probation officer's got these fucked up grin on their face, but now they know they can't fuck with me. So I look at them and like, okay, let's do this. Put my arms out, they put the cuffs on, so I go away. Now, some of the things I learned while in the federal institution was like very good shit. Some people watch movies like Casino and Goodfellas. I actually had the opportunity to meet like some of the fucking actual people that was like new people from the movie or like family members. Organized crime taught me a lot of very important things. Some of the important things they taught me was keep your enemies close to you, very close. Keep your friends close to you, but you always got to keep your enemies even closer. Anybody that's outside your crew, you really don't need to be fucking with. Because when people know you're on your shit and they know you are the shit, people will migrate to you just to say that they know you, just to see if they can get some information out of you. When basically, if you didn't know the shit that you know, people wouldn't fuck with you anyway. So basically, they just trying to ride the bandwagon. So what do? You only fuck with people in your crew and the people that's on your level. Everybody outside your circle is like, fuck them. You have no use for them. I mean, they're like fucking cattle. You're just waiting to get led somewhere. That's basically about basically how it goes. They also told me about how when we get a little of power, we like to go flaunt it and we like to go brag. When you do high-powered shit, especially crime, you keep your fucking mouth shut. To me, like defacing a web page is like some of the most stupidest shit in the fucking world unless you like know the fucking person. It's better just to own that bitch and use that bitch when you feel like it. Don't let them know that you own it. I mean, what's the reason? If it's fucking Blockbuster Music, write on that bitch and just take like credit cards for like the rest of your fucking life. Don't fucking deface it. Just chill the fuck out. When you ain't doing that, box from it. You're not doing that. Use the accounts on that shit. Make up new identities. Make up new names. Make up new credit cards and different names. Everything has a purpose, but it's basically about, do you know how to use it? But you have to be able to study your shit and analyze exactly what's around you. Because one thing that you learn is that the diameter of your thoughts equals the circumference of your activities. So if you speak and think small shit, that's all you can do. So basically, you have to learn how to study and you have to stay on your shit. If you're in a crew, you should stay just within your crew. Everybody outside your crew, you really don't need to fuck with. Because when you out and people know what the fuck you capable of, they're going to ask you stupid questions. They're going to think you're fucking Dell customer service calling you like all hours a day asking stupid computer questions. And I mean, it's one thing I hate is for fuckers to call me and like, yeah, my computer's fucking up. What can I do? I mean, goddamn, call customer service. I mean, I'm surprised myself when I haven't rang today right now somebody asking me, yeah, something fucking up on my computer. How do I fix it? I mean, just stupid shit like that just like can fuck up your day. Especially when people do that all day long. Can you get my girlfriend's Hotmail account? Why? How come you don't hack into a bank? All this other stupid type of shit. I mean, nobody feel like hearing all that type of crazy stuff.
Speech was only supposed to be an hour, right? Yeah, yeah, we're like 5 minutes ago, and like just wanted to do some Q&A and shit, and like check out the soccer that's doing stuff.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, all right.
Yeah, the legal reasons are we just do questions and answers. I can't get into that stuff. Questions?
We got the old Celico 51 and Stargate docs if you want to take a look at them from back in the day. Got some vintage cell phone hardware. All perfectly legal, of course.
Yeah, perfectly legal, 100%.
Check it out. Any questions?
Yeah.
Now that the phone companies have probably been making advances in how they protect against cell phone cloning, how much of that has cut down on what is being done right now? I mean, with any type of system, there's always a hack and a counterattack, or an attacker and a defender. If they're improving, have they improved their defenses sufficiently that it's cut down a lot on, or made the knowledge requirement to clone cell phones higher, or is it still as pervasive today?
Well, yeah, let me handle this one.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Well, the analog networks being phased out, obviously it's still going to be around for legacy customers and for emergency services and stuff like that. There are a couple interesting methods that you can use to still get up on shit. Obviously, there's still analog customers around, few be as they may. So if you find valid analog pairs, you should still be able to clone them, at least for one call. Most likely if it's not in a A-key area, because, what was it, back in 96, 97? Yeah, after all the shit went down, the CTIA, the Cellular Telecommunications Industry of America, they're basically like the overseeing industry regulating organization for the cell industry. They implemented this thing called the authentication key, or A-key. And that's it's a unique key in each phone. It's just an extra level of protection on top of the ESN-MIN pair. It's fairly hard to break. It has, you know, nothing's perfect, but it cut down on analog cloning a lot. What you can do right now is for digital accounts still have an 11-digit, is it 11? 11 or 13-digit decimal ESN and, you know, phone number min pair,
yeah,
so which is what your phone actually uses when it goes into roaming mode in a non-service area.
Yeah.
So if you take that pair and program it into an OKI 9 or whatever, and you're in an area serviced by that roaming partner, you should be able to make calls. And you're actually cloning an analog phone off a digital pair, and that does still work.
But digital is not secure, because during the time around 93, 94, just before we all got hit, from the UK, a friend of ours by the name of Mark, he already had to like the shit to like to pop digital phones. It would have cost us like $2,300 to get. So if we wanted to do digital phones, actually we could have done it.
But in the U.S., the digital phones weren't really out.
No. I mean, I still have, like, the chip that has, like, a security password on it that I could activate.
The Europeans cracked the digital algorithm for GSM, and they cracked the encryption on that a while ago. It's really tricky to do in the field because you got to crunch a lot of math on it. As far as the digital stuff here goes, I was going to get into that in my speech at 8, but basically they have successfully cloned a Sprint PCS CDMA handset, but it was only in the lab. So these guys that I don't necessarily know from Buffalo that did it. But it, again, it's really hard to do in the field. It's damn near impossible because of the hardware restrictions. So for now, I mean, like, cloning's pretty much dead.
Yeah, it's pretty much dead.
Some of the lost art.
Basically, what most people don't know, and that most of these companies won't tell you, basically, when you have pick up and go, pick up and go came out because they wanted to stop cell phone cloning.
38%?
Yes, 38%. So basically, if we wasn't freaking shit, you would have no fucking pick up and go. And so everybody with fucked up credit, shit would be still fucked up and you'd be using pay phones. So basically, the whole pick up and go was just basically their way of, like, okay.
They can cut down the cloning,
yeah,
and they can make more money.
Exactly.
What a concept.
So that's the reason why you actually have pick up and go. But still, pick up and go, I hear, but I'm not saying exactly, that the logarithm they use for pick up and go, when you have to scratch the shit off and punch the shit in, is a certain formula that they use that you can basically
generate it.
Izzy Splizzy that too. So
I don't think they know what Izzy Splizzy means.
Oh yeah, right, I'm talking to cults. You can social engineer that shit too. Any other questions? Well, okay.
Cool.
Yeah, that'll wrap it up.
If you want to check out, we've got on his old Celco 51 laptop, the actual software they used to use with the cables, like Mont 66 and some of the other softwares you might not be familiar with. All right.
Thing?
Oh yeah, I just didn't bring the power supply.
Yeah,
yeah, I forgot
that's
about it.
On these old ones, man, batteries are dead.
Yeah, the batteries are basically no good anyway.
Yeah, for a few minutes.
I have free calculus, and I have to take the organic chemistry class that the feds fucked up, and I should be applying next year in the fall. DJ
and Titty Bar.
Yeah, DJ and Titty Bar playing techno.
Bass tour.
Thanks.
Oh, what? No, dude, mine power's on. Oh, yeah, dude, this is the, did I show you this? The original Network Wizards C-Tac, dude, like, Lauder himself built this. Like, you get Mark Lauder. Oh, that's, I think I told you. I got prefab circuit boards to fucking build these. I got the code, schematics, fucking parts
all that
list.
Shit once.
Huh?
Did you post most of that shit to your website?
No, I posted the pit code and the schematics and shit, but I actually have prefab boards, so if you want to fucking build one, like, I should have it in the next couple of days before I go back to Cali. So.
Sweet.
I think I got like 5 or 6 of them left. It's crazy, dude, because, like, these, like, you can't get the original ones anymore. Like, this is a fucking piece of history. Like,
this,
and, like, an X86 laptop is what Shimo used to track down Mythic. Like, this is, like, the actual gear. But the C-Tech clones, you can sell those things on eBay for, like, $100-$150, and all you need is a pick, the source that I got, circuit board, and, like, the connector that you can get off a fucking battery loan. And with the software, it's really fun, because you can triangulate people's shit through analog cell sites, you can fucking follow conversations through handoffs, you can fucking watch for the bins to come up and, like, calculate decimal gauge of the tower, dude.
Oh,
it's great.
Huh?
No. This is an analog phone. This is straight up like 800 megahertz.
Yeah, I got pulled over in Canada a couple times. I was driving and
dude, there's no legitimate reason for America to ever go to Canada. Ever.
Put the sticker on my car, they're like, pull over. Immigration guy walks over, searching the car. Yeah, searching through my shit like, I see how they interest in computers. I'm like,
oh, shit.
Shit! I'm like, yeah, they're pretty interesting.
So, when you talk to these guys, how did you determine who you could talk to? The first step would be who you can trust to know who you can trust.
Well, basically, in a federal institution, no matter what you do, some way, somebody always has a way of finding out your stuff. If you a snitch, you snitched on somebody, they find out. I mean, I know a guy who dealt with, and I was in McKean Camp in Bradford, Pennsylvania. Basically, if you know anybody who stayed in Bradford, Pennsylvania, in McKean Camp, they remember who I was because at one time, they tried to say I tried to escape when I was out in the field working, and they, like, shut down the whole fucking camp. They kept me in the hole for, like, 9 days, and they knew I was, like, in the field working because there was, like, other guys around me just to, like, teach me a lesson and, like, make me do time like a real man because the federal system said that the problems that we caused, that I received, like, a slap on the wrist, and I should have got, like, real hard of jail time. But at first, I was facing, like, 6 or 7 years. It was, like, a lot of... We would do shit, like, we would scan people's cell phone and, like, listen to people say, yeah, well, I'm about to drop something off right here. And we'll go there and, like, meet them. I mean,
Yeah, that's how when I'm down for Jack.
Exactly. So, you know, we would, like... We was, like, into, like, some real shit. It's, like, if we did a crime, it was, like... You didn't know what the fuck was going on because you're like...
How did you get this shit back, or was this not actually...
Oh, basically what happens is they take your shit to the property room, which is like on the 11th floor of the federal building downtown. And basically once your case closed out, you can have your attorney write a letter and they'll give you all your property back. Minus,
he's got a section
like all my bugging devices, my DDI, all my DDI shit, they kept that. I mean, you have just a special request. It's a lot of stuff they just won't even tell you. I mean, you actually have to know the right words, and you actually have to stay on your attorney's ass unless he knows about computer crime.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, I remember going into the federal office. And if anybody who stays in Detroit and knows DJ Fingers, you can ask him. He went to the federal building with me, and I'm trying to get my driver's license and social security card back. And he's like, hold on.
This is one of the...
So I'm sitting here waiting.
Originally
to come back.
Phone, but OmniPoint Market in
she
the
comes
US,
back, reception says, they said they can't find
so it. So you can use this for ISO.
So I'm like,
you
tell him you cannot find my driver's license social security card. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, right. So she said, the agent, he'll be here to speak with you in a second. He's in the back. So she leaves the room. Me and my cousin are speaking. I'm like, why the fuck are these bitches such dickheads?
Hello?
I mean, I swear. They keep my shit, and then they gonna lie and say they ain't got it.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Agent comes from the back room and says, first thing he said, look, I'm not trying to be a dickhead or anything, but blah, blah. So I'm like, you got the fucking room wired. I'm like, ain't this a bitch? So it's like...
Yeah, let's all walk over there because I got to set up.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Hey, man, it's good to see you talking.
Oh.
Hey, how's it going? I'm not getting drunk. Yeah.
I might need your laptop. I'm sure you're going to talk to her that one.
Sure, go on.
Really good. I
mean, basically, it's like in the federal system, everybody knows who you are. And if you don't want them to prevent you, because somebody's trying to find a way to find you out, so basically it's like, you'll know basically who to trust and who not to trust. Because basically, they stand out. If you want to be around you all the time, you basically know not to trust them. You got freeloaders. And, yeah, so it's basically, I just always kept to myself, and I just kept to get. I remember I got Linux administration into the federal system. But it's a certain way you have to mark your packet. So if you know anybody who's in the federal system and they want to get in some computer shit through the system, talk to me. I can tell you how to get it in. It's a certain way you have to say it. But see, I didn't do it on another package, and it was a book called Programming for Dummies. They confiscated it and said, we ain't giving it to you. I'm like, so I can get Linux administration, but I can't get Programming for Dummies. So I just
walk out the building.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Oh, awesome. They didn't give me a VGA cable.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that was,
we're actually making
a
document.
Yeah, we
make,
yeah,
just
we
need,
about making
a VGA to hook up to that.
Yeah. I mean, it would make one hell of a movie, because it
What's
would
that?
Be like, people would be like,
programming motherfucker.
Oh, that's Ryan.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you mean like you jack
somebody? Oh, you have one? He's gonna see if,
tap on the window, like,
okay. Yeah.
What? The $600 in your pocket, plus we dropping off over here on 6 Mile and Pinehurst. What the fuck
is $600 is going to 6 Mile and Pinehurst?
They want to be complicated? You hit them with a taser. Why? Because it's quick and it's quiet.
I thought it was a good talk.
So you appreciate that. Yeah.
I met you when you did the keynote a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Seen you in Vegas a few times.
I don't think there was any calls this year. It was because, well, probably for good. I don't know what that is.
be nice.